Why don't, could you, let's have a quiz. So take out a piece of paper, quickly. Sign your name on the piece of paper. Quickly. Close. The quiz question is, what is the name of this course? And hand it in.
Can you scroll up a little bit?
Is it up there? Okay. Thank you.
Is that a team name or just a... Team?
No, just... That's close enough. Hand them in. Hand them in, please. It's close enough. That's close enough.
These mosaics too, right?
Actually, most people will probably get the name of the course wrong. Because its name is kind of funny. It's actually Senior Project, or Senior Project Design 1, I think is the official name. No, I'm not going to. No, but that's, it's over. So when attendance drops, I usually give quizzes. Because I like to reward people who show up on time and... All right, so what's going on? What did you turn in today? The what? Test specifications. So how did that go? A lot of blank looks. You turned in the test specifications today, right? So what aspect of that did you turn in? You focused mostly on what? Well, that when you're done with Senior Design 2, what's that section going to contain? What are the major pieces of that section? What kind? So how? So you're going to have what pieces in that section when you're done with the course? You're going to have a description of your procedures, and then you're going to have your test results. And the important thing in that section, when you're done with Senior Design, is that you actually demonstrate you've met your design constraints. So what parts of that were due today? Obviously, you don't have results because you haven't built them. You're describing the tests you're going to run. And what were the goal of those tests? Well, the goals of those tests are twofold. One is to demonstrate that you meet your design constraints. So for your major design constraints, we should be able to see tests that have been designed to measure those design constraints. And then the other piece is to demonstrate sort of key functionality and what we call unit testing of the system. And those are some of the things we talked about last time. This is a hard section for you to write. We're actually looking at these sections for Senior Design 2, and many of the Senior Design 2 projects still don't have this section is not really strong yet. And a lot of the Senior Design 2 teams still don't get this idea that they're supposed to be testing their design constraints. So it's not enough just to say, well, you know, our system works. That's not the point of the tests you're running. The point of the tests that you're running are to say, well, we have this design constraint, the performance was supposed to be, you know, 50%, we measured 51%, and some analysis of that. So my guess is the sections you turned in today are probably not the greatest, but this is going to be a process. We'll update this section two or three times through the rest of the course. So what's up after, what's coming up next week? Executive summary? And we talked about that in class last week. And you're also going to turn in your revised approaches next week. And then the following week, we're going to have the design reviews on the 12th. So hopefully next week, you will sit down with your advisors and show them a rough draft of your presentation and talk about what should be in your presentation, what should be in that final presentation. Any questions on administrative issues? So what I want to talk about today is the product specification. So you're one of the next things that you're going to generate for your projects is a product specification. This is like a one-page data sheet for your projects. Now, I used to have this used to actually be the first, this used to be the first assignment. I used to try to get you to do this actually when you walked in the door and seen your design, but that hasn't worked too well over the years. So this year, I'm pushing this back to later in the semester. And the reason for that is I wanted to give you some time to actually understand the technical specifications for your projects. So when you look at a product specification like this, this is a project review, and we'll go through these in a little more detail. But let me just kind of briefly show some of them. This is a product spec for the Arduino board, which a number of projects are actually using. So when you look at these product specifications, what are some of the things that you see that are common to all of these product specifications? A picture of the product. Now, how are you going to create a picture of the product when you don't actually have your product built? No.
Draw it on a napkin.
Hopefully something will, you'll use a little more sophisticated tool. One of the things that is obvious to me, but I'm learning is not necessarily obvious to students, is how you use, how and why you use these kinds of mechanisms to communicate ideas. So what I mean by that is the following, that often when I work with students on software development and their job involves building a program that has a user interface, very often students will bring to you an actual version of the program with some rough version of the user interface implemented. You know, they'll say, well, here's like the first version and it's got some of the basic features. What do you think? And usually I'm pretty critical, because if your job is to write a piece of software that's going to have a user interface and you've been trained in the kind of senior design or the kind of design engineering process we advocate in this course. How are you going to approach that job of building that software that has a user interface? If your job is to write a piece of software that has a user interface, having been through this senior design course, how will you approach the task of creating this user interface? Come on, don't be bashful. Close. Good. What are you not going to do? What you're not going to do is program up something, bring it to your boss, and say, here, what do you think? Why?
Can't see programs.
No, but I mean, no, not quite. Why are you not going to do that? So you're going to spend a lot of time making the borders blue, making the font Bookman 12, making the little thingy pop up in the middle of the screen. And what more than likely is your boss going to say?
Does it work?
Or what?
Does it work?
No.
Is this what I
No. Your boss is going to say, I don't like blue. I don't like that little thingy popping up. And whatever the other thing I mentioned was that you did. I don't like that either, the font. Okay, so what are you going to do? You're going to go back and reprogram that. What's wrong with that process? Okay, and we're learning in this course time means
money.
Why couldn't the two of you, when you were tasked with this assignment, sat down and agreed to the interface ahead of time? Why did you waste all that programming time trying to make that little thing pop up in the middle of the screen, only to find out that that whole junk section of code is shot because your boss doesn't like the program to work that way? So how would you approach that task, having been through this course where we emphasize an upfront design process? Now, what Mark was suggesting was good, which is collecting requirements and things, but let's suppose this is not quite something on that scale, something smaller. What would be the logical thing to do to make sure that you could program this interface once and only once and get it right the first time? And this is the part, this is how I find this interesting, because you learn a lot of separate tools in school, but you don't seem to somehow understand how all these things could be put together to do something useful. So, you have a tool called PowerPoint. What's PowerPoint good at? Okay. When you're developing a user interface for software, is there a presentation component to that? Yes. So what would a logical thing to do be? Combining these two concepts. Why not prototype the interface in PowerPoint? Get all the colors, all the graphics, get everybody to agree to this, and then start programming. In fact, if you do professional software development, there are user interface builders that let you actually create these interfaces without programming them. Whether you're working in Java or C# or any of these environments, they have tools that will let you essentially graphically prototype the interface without writing code so that you can get agreement on what the interface for the software would be. Now, why is it dangerous to do that just by asking people what they want? Well, your boss's opinion may be different from the actual user of the software. If you have multiple bosses, they may all have different opinions. So there's no way to really drive that discussion to a conclusion without having some actual prototype of the interface that people can touch and look at and really get comfortable with. Okay, we got that idea. Simple concept, right? How does that relate to this product specification? We established that one of the common things amongst all these product specifications is they have a picture of the product. How many of you have pictures of your products right now? Maybe one. Which project is that?
The pedestrian.
Okay. So, where are we going to get these pictures of your product? You're going to make them in some kind of drawing tool. Whether it's SolidWorks, whether it's AutoCAD, whether it's PowerPoint, you know, whatever tool kind of suits your needs. We'll get to that. That's a good question. And a similar question is for projects that involve things like land surveys or something. What do we do? And we'll get to that. That's why there's a bunch of different examples here. Now, why is there benefit to creating a very detailed drawing of your product before you've ever built it? Perfect Pitch team, please answer this question, since I meet with them regularly on this issue. So describe for the class, I'm going to pick on them a little bit. Describe for the class where we're at right now in the design process. Why?
Why are
we
trying to figure that out?
Yes. Why don't you just build it? You guys go off and build a circuit board, and then the ME's just go and buy some box that's big enough to fit that circuit board in, and voila, we have it. The perfect pitch, handheld device that's about this big. It's supposed to be handheld, and there's a certain amount of mechanical design or ergonomics that go into that. And when you have that constraint, figuring out where you're going to stuff all the components becomes a big issue. So they have a project where there's definitely an iteration between the physical design and the electronics that's going inside, and they have to iterate back and forth on this. And that's done in the drawing stage through a tool like... What tool did you guys use? SolidWorks to do the box. And they've actually got, I haven't seen the finished thing yet, but they've got the circuit provisions for the circuit board inside the box. They can show me how it's going to open and all that kind of stuff. And hopefully we're thrashing out all these issues about what's going to fit where and all that before we ever actually build this thing. So that's one example of why you want to go through some kind of process where you draw a fairly detailed version of your product. Another more basic example is the customer. You know, what color are you going to make this thing? How are you going to shape it? You know, are you just going to build a box or are you going to shape it? If you look at, for example, the physical design of these products, you know, when you build something like a computer, you're going to have product design engineers who have a lot of control over the shapes and sizes of these things, and you're going to have to design into those enclosures. So, you know, obviously if you're trying to if you're a company like Sony or any kind of commercial company, you have a certain brand name that you've built. You have a certain if you notice with most consumer-driven companies, they have a certain product image that they project every year, and then they gradually update that image. So, you know, 1 year you may be building black products with silver Sony letters on them, and the next year, if I don't know if you pay attention to this, but you'll notice companies always migrate their designs, but they also kind of preserve their image. You know, Apple always has the Apple on it somewhere, but the actual colors and shapes and sizes tend to vary as the market demands shift. Companies actually try to, the part you may not realize is that companies often change these things because this is the way they create the demand to go and buy new products. One of the most sophisticated or most advanced companies at this are auto companies. If you notice, you know, the common phenomenon is when you buy a new car, and I know many of you haven't had a chance to do that yet, but you buy a new car, of course you think that car is really cool, it's got great styling, right? What happens 5 years from now? You look at that car and you say, my gosh, this thing is old. It's not cool, it looks like a, you know, box or something. Why do you think this happens? I mean, if you think about this, your perception of that car has changed, of the design of that car has changed significantly in 5 years. You've gone from thinking that's a leading edge, really cool, edgy design, to this thing is a clunker. That's because car companies spend billions of dollars trying to control your perceptions and create a demand in you to buy something new because that thing has become old or outdated. So they're constantly modifying their designs to create more market demand. And most market-driven companies do this. Computers change colors, you know, just all this kind of stuff. It's hilarious. Then you go from black to cream to blues to blacks, and they go on this perpetual cycle. So all of these kinds of issues are thrashed out before you ever start building something. And we have computer tools to do this. Now, one of the areas senior design students have been very weak on is creating drawings of their products, their projects, their products before they've built them. And this is one reason why I push the product spec early in the course, because I want you as a team to sit down with some tools and design and prototype what this thing is going to look like and resolve many of the design issues that are going to come up in that. So these things have to have a picture, and the picture needs to be fairly accurate. Now we'll get back to the concrete thing in a second when we look at a couple of the other examples of this. What else should be on this product specification page? When you're shopping on, I don't know, Amazon or Best Buy, after you've kind of brought up the main page for the thing, what are you going to do next? You're going to what?
Read the description.
Why?
To see what it has, what it does.
Because?
See if it meets my needs.
Okay, and what are you looking for in meeting your needs?
Like a computer, right? How fast is it? How much does it store?
So what do we call those? Or, in other words, features, right? So you're looking for features that differentiate this product over other products. Now, one of the things I really like about this age of the internet is, I don't know how much you guys shop online. I tend to do a lot of shopping online. When you go onto sites like Best Buy, they have these comparison features, which are really cool. You can select a bunch of products and run the compare, and they'll generate a table. It'll show you all the different features. And that's, I think, a really significant feature of a lot of these websites, because it's hard sometimes to read through all the specs and figure out what all these things are. But generally speaking, if you're pushing a product, after the picture, what's the next thing that people are going to be looking for on this product specification? Price? No. You actually won't rarely see price on product specs.
What? Features?
The features that mean something to you, right? The features that differentiate this particular model and product. So that's the next thing that should appear on your product specification page. I want some, either in bullets or whatever, some information about what makes your project or your product unique and different than what's already out there. What are the selling points of your particular project? What differentiates you from the competition, so to speak? So, you know, here we have some key features. Here we actually have some more technical features. And then here we have more detailed specifications. Okay, and in the computer industry, this is kind of standard. So I think, many of you are used to looking at these kinds of specifications. These are a little bit technical. This is geared more towards a tech-savvy type customer. But this is a pretty good example of a product-oriented product specification. Now, do we get these from senior design projects? No, because it's very hard for you to articulate things at this level of detail because you don't quite understand your products or your projects yet at this level of detail. But that's what we're driving you towards. So, when I started teaching here at Temple, of course, the non-electrical engineering students beat me up and said, aha, but that's only really relevant to electrical engineering. So here's a technical specification, if you will, for a company whose business is construction projects. Now, what are they going to be trying to sell? And actually, this isn't even in English, which makes it more interesting, but I like the graphics on this. So, what are they trying to sell? And you don't even need to know the other text. It's how have they marketed themselves? They're a construction project management company. That's their product. You want a building built, you call them and they'll handle it for you. So what are they going to try to sell you in their technical specification? It's sticking there right in front of your faces. Trust, right? Why trust? Who's that? Do we have any? We have some civils in here, right? Why is trust so important in construction project management? And what do we know about any major construction project? Time? What?
Time's very important. Every part of the project usually depends on someone else getting their part of the project done. So I guess you have to trust that this construction company is going to be able to handle all the subcontractors, contractors, just to be able to, get everything done on time so their project doesn't become delayed, basically.
Almost every major project, particularly construction projects, hit problems. That seems to be particularly true in the construction industry. Whenever you build a building, there's always problems, serious problems, like the walls don't line up, or one of the more interesting projects I got a chance to observe, which just amazed me, was they put a brick facade on a library at my former school. And they started bricking it from two ends of the building. I don't know why they did this, but they had guys in there bricking. And what happened when they met? They were actually off. And I found out about this because I happened to be going past, working on a weekend, and there was a supervisor and a couple of the senior bricklayers, and they were very clearly talking about this. So I had to go over and say, what's up? And they explained to me that somehow, some way, things didn't line up. They actually had to take off a whole bunch of brick and redo it. It was really amazing, incredibly expensive. But, you know, projects, you always have problems like that. These skyscrapers you see go up that you think everything is plumb, if you talk to people actually building them, you find, oh, yeah, we were off by like 4 inches over there and 3 inches over there and, you know, all that stuff. So if you're the person with the money who's gonna fund this project, what are you ultimately betting on when you do this, the person, the trust of your manager, that they'll be able to solve these problems? So this company is selling you on trust. So they have a nice picture here, trustful looking, and you know, right up front they talk about building on trust. So then I had the environmentalist students saying, well, you know, that's construction projects and electronics. That's not environmental stuff. So here's a page for selling rain barrels. If you're in the business of selling rain barrels, I actually almost bought some of these the other, when I was building a shed in my backyard. What are you going to, rain barrels, how are you going to sell rain barrels? And why? Rain barrels are actually interesting. In my, where I used to live, which was in the country, I could go to the, we had a great scrap yard where you could get all sorts of cool stuff that like farms threw away and things. So I could get like big barrels for about $5 each. How much do these rain barrels sell for at Home Depot? They're about $100 or $50. So if you're in the business of selling these things, how are you going to sell them? What are you going to need to do on your product specification to grab people's attention? What? You're certainly going to have to hit heavy on the environmental impact issues. That's why you buy these things. But what are some of the other issues that you might want to somehow convince people of? What happens if you have a barrel of water sitting in your backyard for long periods of time? What?
Contamination.
It gets gunky with all sorts of crud. Basic biology. So you might talk about some of that in your data sheet. But you're certainly going to talk about, you know, benefits of using this and such. So there's a page that's geared more towards a fairly simple product, but a little bit more environmentally sensitive. This is an example of a software product. If you're trying to sell software, you're obviously going to try to appeal to people's, to the new features in your software. If you're selling an existing product that is going through an upgrade, if you're selling a product like Adobe Acrobat, what's one of the big things you're going to need to stress in your sales pitch? With what? And? No, close. What about current computers?
Will it run on my computer?
Not just will it run on your computer, but what do they put in the front and center on this page? Compatibility with what? You've got to worry about compatibility with existing environments like Microsoft Office, right? So yes, you're going to talk about cross-platform development. That's one of Adobe's big things, is they can provide you the same content viewed the same way across lots of different platforms. And they're compatible. They have to worry about being compatible with all the major software environments out there, like Microsoft Office and such. And then what Adobe also tries to sell you on is their vision for document management. So you'll often see talk about things like content-rich environments and such. Yep?
Do you ever mention your competition in any of these, or do you just pretend they don't exist?
That's an interesting point. And I don't want to turn this into a marketing class, but what's been one of the major changes in political advertising over the last 20 years? What's called the negative campaigning. It used to be when you ran a political ad, you only talked about yourself. Why? Why? Name recognition. You're essentially giving them free advertising. So for many years, the focus was to sort of only talk about yourself and not really say, not get into this kind of negative campaigning. But I don't know, about 10, 15, 20 years ago, that took a big turn. And now you see so much negative, it's all negative campaigning. It's very rare to see a one-sided advertisement. So, you know, there's this theory that the more you mention your competition, the more you're giving them free advertising. But today you will see it. You will see people leverage other products. So if you're selling AMD processors, for example, what are you going to have to say? And you're going to want to continue to hammer into people that your AMD processors are compatible with Intel processors. So you kind of have to give Intel some. When you buy a laptop, what do you see? You know, it always amazes me when you buy a brand new laptop. It comes now with all sorts of stickers, right? In fact, if you're like me, first thing you do is take off most of these stickers. But why do they put all these stickers on? You know, they have the sticker for Intel compatibility. They have the sticker for Microsoft certified and all these kinds of things because they're trying to build comfort in you that this supports all the major applications and hardware and software and all that you're going to be interested in. So they're giving advertising to those other companies, but in return they're able to sort of leverage those brands. So it's okay, I think. It just has to be, you have to do it in the right way. If you constantly say, you know, our computers are better than Dell's, at some point people are going to say, well, you know, if everybody's saying they're better than Dell, Dell must be the best brand because everybody feels a need to compete with them. So this is a page for a product that you're not really going to sell to the public. You're going to sell this to manufacturing facilities, or you're going to sell this to people who will then embed this in their systems and sell them. So it's an example of how you might do that. There's a little bit too much text here, but since this isn't geared towards an end consumer necessarily, you can get away with a little more technical looking spec sheet. This is a very technical spec sheet because this is a computer board that is really geared towards a technical audience. So this has the look more of a data sheet. Now, again, you know, why do we have you do this exercise? It's not just to have another piece of documentation. This is not something meant for you just to have somebody go off and do this and not talk to anybody else in the group. The point is you can use this as a tool to get everybody on the team on the same page about what the major goals and features of your product are going to be. So if you put time into this in that way, you'll find it'll help you clarify what distinguishes in your project and what's important about your project. So let's look at a few product specifications for the second semester teams, assuming I can still find these. Yeah, that didn't work. So this is a Senior Design 2 team that's building a guitar amplifier that mixes both vacuum tubes and semiconductors. And so they have a picture, and they have some specifications, a description of the device. This is a project, that this TerraThermal project, where they're designing a closed-loop geothermal system for a housing subdivision. Let me see if it should be. So your product specification will be put as an appendix in your design document. Yeah, so here's their product spec. So they give a little bit of description of how the technology works, a little bit of motivation about why you would use this, some kind of data, some kind of visual to give you some sense of the benefit of this system, and then some kind of marketing hype. So let's talk about the concrete. Let's actually go to, let's look at one of the concrete projects. So this is a project involving predicting the properties of various concrete mixes. So there's a little bit of description of self-consolidating concrete, a little bit of description of the kiln dust, and then some discussion of the benefits of their approach, and a graphic about cost reduction, which is nice. So let's talk about your project. So what's the goal of your project? Okay, and what is the CS, what does that stand for? Okay, so the output of your project is a material?
It's basically
like this, okay? So there's an example that, not all these data sheets are the same quality, but most of them are pretty decent by now. Okay, so any questions on that? So the product spec should be the last document that you're responsible for, like document type. And at this point then in the course, we've been through all of the different pieces of the document. So if you have any, further questions on these things, just speak up, but otherwise, that's it. Any questions or comments or issues? Yep.
All right. So, for theirs, they can just list specifications for like parts, things like that. But for the bridge, most of our stuff is referencing ACI codes and everything. So, should we have like sort of an explanation section on the specifics and then a references section of all the different codes?
You should definitely do both. Think of the market you're trying to hit for your product spec as somebody who's not necessarily an expert in all the codes. So, for example, maybe a city planner who might not know all the technical issues about codes, but would want. So, you need to explain something about the significance of your design and all that. But you also need to list the codes so they know you're paying attention to those things. Yeah, I mean, I think with any of your projects, you should definitely get out on the internet and look at companies that sell these kinds of things and see how they do these things. It'll be pretty easy to find that. So I am sure you can find product specs from companies that build small bridges and things. You might also look at products like ladders and some related things where they get into similar kinds of specifications. I mean, you can buy, for example, you can buy these prefab walkways and things, and I'm sure you could follow a lot, the form, what they're doing for those as well. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to just say, ASTM this, ASTM that, because for someone who's not an expert on those things, they won't know what that means. So you want to have both. And you probably want to do them side by side, have some text, and then have the specifications. Okay? All right. So I will see you next week.